WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is back on his way back to Washington after addressing Israeli lawmakers and signing a Gaza peace deal as all living Israeli hostages and some 2,000 Palestinian prisoners are released. CBS's Nancy Cordes says now,
one of the biggest questions of all is who will pay to rebuild war-torn Gaza. Regional experts estimate it will cost $53 billion.
The National Weather Service in Phoenix says a sudden and powerful microburst hit Tempe, Arizona today, damaging businesses and homes. Dale Seawright's business was hit.
All of a sudden, we heard some cracking of the windows over there, and we took off running, and about 2 seconds later, the whole thing came down in front of us.
A nor'easter is moving on after one death in Brooklyn, New York, and as meteorologist Paul Hagen explains,
we do have coastal flood advisories and warnings in effect from Long Island down to New Jersey and all the way down to the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
Baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Dodgers meet for Game 1 of the National League Championship Series at AmFam Field. The last time the Brewers made it this far was in 2018, when they lost in 7 games to this same Dodgers team. The Dodgers then advanced to the World Series, but lost to the Boston Red Sox in 5. College football. The Badgers, with another poor performance, losing 37-0 on homecoming to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
Fall camp, I would tell you that we were in a better place. No, we're not better than most of the people or maybe anybody right now that we're playing.
NFL, the Packers over the Bengals, 27-18. Green Bay running back Josh Jacobs led with 5 receptions, 18 carries for a total of 150 yards and 2 touchdowns, even though he had the flu.
I really don't know where it came from. Just kind of woke up this morning just not feeling my best. I told him, I said last time that I felt that way, I had 130 and 2 touchdowns. So it is what it is.
That's Josh Jacobs with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
During Medicare's open enrollment, it's common to receive mailers and see TV commercials that say you're missing out on some benefits. Before you respond to these ads, turn to Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol, here to help you prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Don't be misled into enrolling in a plan that doesn't meet your health needs or cover your medications. Visit the Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol website at smpwi.org.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Oh, dear leader, getting richer and richer. ABC News had a story over the weekend of how Trump's accused of profiting from the presidency as crypto ventures rake in hundreds of millions of dollars. And you go, yeah. And look, you know, there was this shameless show of greed back in, I think it was April, that they pointed to. Where you had the president coming in on his helicopter, landing like royalty at his Virginia golf club, rolled out the red carpet for the top 220 holders of his money, Trump cryptocurrency, the meme coin thing that they got. And look, these aren't just rich people. These are rich people. These are rich people who can cough up enough money to gamble on a meme coin controlled mostly by Trump and his kids. These people have poured hundreds of millions into Trump's digital casino. And who's being enriched by this? Of course, Trump's family. Hundreds of millions of dollars in money in their pocket, right from the hopeful investors right into the pockets of one of the richest men in the world or in this country, while working people like you and me, well, we're the ones not able to pay our bills. And look, it kind of started as a joke because Trump himself called Bitcoin a scam just to 2021. And now here he is raking in billions off these digital tokens, parading like a king with his sons running the business while he headlines gala dinners that promise dining with the president. But you gotta buy in deep. Meanwhile, again, people like you and me who clock in every day, punch the clock to earn a paycheck, getting harder and harder. No pay increases, benefits are being slashed, cost inflation's up. And again, the guy behind the crypto empire, the unitary executive, he's not serving we the people, he's exploiting the presidency. This for him is a platform to get richer off the backs of everyone else. And don't be fooled by the legal smokescreens or trust funds or any of that stuff. They're held in the kid's name. You remember how crazy the right went over Hunter Biden? Oh man, he's a piker compared to these kids. And what this is it's corruption normalized. This is what happens in authoritarian regimes. The family gets wildly wealthy. And what he does is he sells off VIP access tickets, like it's a circus. And the line between public official and private profiteer kind of blurred. And you've got a guy who shows no shame or consequence. So what happens? The rich get richer and the rest of us, we get fleeced. And democracy rots while Trump spends his fortune on the latest crypto scam. This isn't leadership, it's a hustle. And it's working people, again, who get left holding the bag. While we see Republicans trying to, again, for like the 70th time in the last 15 years, kill off Obamacare, which, interestingly enough, overwhelmingly benefits red states and MAGA voters, you figure it out, I can't, and yet still buying his crappy coins. And here we are in this moment where Democrats are trying to save the Affordable Care Act for Trump voters. And you've got Trump going, well, you shut down the government. I'm going to start targeting Democrat-oriented workers. So we're going to start firing those Democrat, whatever that means. Because remember, the loyalty oath that you're going to have to swear to, you're gonna have to know your favorite Trump executive order if you want to work in this country. You better be able to snap to and say what you love about Donald Trump. Because here what we're seeing is an economic civil war. They are targeting blue states. Blue states that hold a really big lead in tech and innovation and healthcare and education and all of that stuff. The high road. While red states are pursuing what has always been the low road, deregulate, cut taxes on rich people, give corporate America everything their little wet dream list could possibly imagine, all off the backs of working people. And this is more of that. Look at what one of the first clubs out of the bag, stopping that tunnel project in New York. Pausing the funding, going after transit in Chicago, going after green energy initiatives around the country that are creating thousands of jobs. And yet, MAGA world, not a single peep, like church mice. And the sad reality is while Trump and MAGA world, the billionaire MAGA world, because they know the game. They know what's up. They know that they're using the dim. They're fleecing the working class because they can. They're making more. They're destroying the standard of living in this country. Slashing wages, slashing benefits, making workers more exploitable. And again, it comes down to wherever you sit. If you think you're going to be okay when they're done, then you're going to probably side with them. If you're one of the people who are going to be looking from the outside in, you better figure out how to organize around the idea that you are on the menu. You are the target. Because again, Trump's laying it right out in black and white. I'm going after Democrat-oriented workers. I have no idea what that means. But in his twisted little mind, he does. And it could be you. Could be me. Who knows where this ends? Who knows how far he goes? Because evidently there's no shame in taking food out of the mouths of children. There's no shame in taking health care from millions of people. There's no shame in what they're doing because they don't feel shame. For them, it's all about more. I want more, more profit, more power, more control. When do we, as a country, wake up to that reality? When do we say enough is enough? I know on the 18th, on October 18th, the No Kings rally is coming up. We'll see. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1985. That was the day that clerical and support staff at Columbia University went out on strike. More than 1,000 staff members were represented by the United Auto Workers, District 65. The workers wanted improvements in their benefits and their wages. They were also concerned by pay discrimination for women and minorities. 2 days before the proposed strike was set to begin, the workers held a rally. Trade union leaders spoke out in support of the clerical staff. In a show of solidarity among Ivy League schools, members of the clerical staff union from Yale University made the trip from New Haven, Connecticut to New York City to support the Columbia workers. The Yale union had won its first contract just the year before after a 10-week strike. The Yale delegation chanted, "We love you, 65. Oh, yes, we do. We whipped the Ivy League, and you can too." The strike lasted for 5 days. Some of the students formed the support group Students for a Fair Contract and helped pass out leaflets on the picket line. The Teamsters refused to cross the picket lines, stopping deliveries to the campus. According to the Columbia Spectator newspaper, the final contract included significant gains for the members. They won a 6% increase with retroactivity and additional hikes for minority workers, lower deductibles on medical insurance, and non-discriminatory clause and new technology language. The union's victory at Columbia was part of a wave of strikes by clerical workers at some of the nation's top schools. Stanford University went on strike in 1974 and 1982. Cornell's staff held 3 strikes during the 1980s. The workers who run these elite, well-funded institutions were standing up for their rights as workers.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while Donald Trump rages about immigrants, holds meetings, basically talking about war with non-existent groups, or you've got Wall Street giddy, counting their profits. It's regular people. It's you. It's me. It's working class Americans, the poor, the disabled, families just scraping to get by who are feeling the pain. And you knew from the beginning Trump's agenda was going to be a scorched earth assault on the vulnerable, the poor, the disabled, axing tons of workers, crushing hope, calling it winning. And what we're seeing is not leadership. It's a war on you and me. And here to talk about her recent article over at Mother Jones, I've asked Julie Metro to come talk with me. The article, The Human Cost of Trump's War on Government. Julia, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we knew from the beginning, we knew when Trump took office, we knew what this was going to be. This was going to be an assault on working people. This was going to be him remaking government in a way where, people like him continue to win and folks, well, who work for a living continue to get screwed. How bad has it been, especially for the disabled?
Yeah, so good question. And to take a step back, throughout the years, I've heard wonderful things from disabled people about working for the federal government. It is very accessible. People often do not have to fight for accommodations as much as they do at private businesses. And so, yeah, so a lot of people who are disabled who work for the federal government continue working for the federal government as long as they can because it is known to be an extremely good employer. Well, of course, disabled people were not spared by these mass layoffs that we've seen in U.S. government. And so I had spoken to, for this article, I specifically highlighted the experiences of 4 disabled people who were laid off and restructuring and just gutting agencies. And yeah, they're all very disappointed about losing their jobs. They all like their jobs. And also they all brought stuff to their jobs. We know that around a quarter of American adults live with a disability. And so it's good to have the representation in government because they can bring perspective that other people with disabilities not in government would benefit from.
Yeah. And I was reading something that said, you know, unemployment for the disabled is what, something like three times higher than everyone else?
It's increasing at around triple the rate right now. That just isn't in government. I think one thing that's really connected to that is the rollback from work from home. In 2020, due to the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw a lot of industries get more accommodating to work from home. And I say this, for example, I'm someone who lived with multiple chronic illnesses. I'm a much more efficient worker when I work from home. And there's other people like that too. And so when we saw these tech companies largely pushing the way and other companies rolling back work from home, some people lost their jobs. Some people went into work, got fired because they weren't doing their jobs as well. But that's a large contributor as well.
So what do you say to the person who goes, well, you know, everybody right now is being laid off in government. It's not just the disabled. It's everyone. Are you seeing a focus on people with disability? Because we are seeing a focus on minorities because evidently the DEI thing, that's got to be destroyed because, well, that's the last guy. And as we know, as Dear Leader has said, everything the last guy did is bad. Everything he does is good. So making government more accessible, more inclusive, more diverse, that's bad. What Trump's doing is good. Is it as bad from the inside as it appears to me looking in from the outside?
I would say an interesting thing about disability, it's sometimes part of these anti-DEI attacks, it's sometimes not. Like, for example, there are Republicans with disabilities like Greg Abbott, which and others as well, which I think hinder some of these attacks. And when we see these layoffs, we don't have the hard numbers of disproportionately disabled workers who are being laid off. There are reasons why people with disabilities want to work in DEI-centered work within the federal government. Those people have been largely impacted. There's also something called Schedule A. So Schedule A is a special, I guess, designation for people with disabilities as they're being hired within the federal government. They're actually on a probationary period for 2 years versus one. And so that meant at the very beginning of the administration, we saw a lot of these people get laid off, and it's hard to tell just in the numbers, but if someone's in probationary period for 2 years versus one, there are concerns, of course, that the rates will be higher. However, right. I do not have the hard data.
Now, you said you spoke with four individuals who have been laid off. What's their experience? Walk me through one of their experiences. And is there commonality among the four, if you could?
Yeah, so I spoke to four people. They ranged from working in federal government for like a year and a half to 17 years. And so one person I had spoken to, Josh Shoza, he first worked for the Peace Corps, and then he worked for USAID, and as we know, that agency was completely gutted. And he was working in DEIA work for that agency. And so what his work, as he told me, was for projects around the world. His job was making sure that those projects were accommodating for people with disabilities. And he told me within his workplace, something that were done was having ASL interpreters meeting. Forgot if I mentioned, Josh Shoza is deaf. So he lived with a disability himself. And so he was officially terminated in April, but he was kind of left in the dark starting in January because he had a DEI job.
So was he laid off? Was he fired? What was designation did they use, or did they just eliminate his job and you're
out? It's eliminated jobs. Okay. I mean,
And no way to get him into something else, no way to move in a different direction. So you're just out of luck.
Yeah, you're out of luck. So there are people who were essentially put on administrative leave while they're still being paid. And so he was in that for a little while, just, but then he was terminated. And a common theme among the people I've talked to, they all really liked their jobs and they were all contributing to their jobs and they didn't have many complaints. And so that's what is extremely frustrating about losing a position that you do enjoy the work that you're doing. They were all willing to continue doing it under the current administration.
Yeah, no, and look, you know, as you pointed out, it is not easy to find jobs that are good jobs that have a reasonable income, that have good benefits, that have some security. It's not easy for average, everyday, able-bodied workers to find that. I can't imagine how much more difficult it is for people with the kind of challenges that these four that you laid out have to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, this person wasn't featured in this article, but earlier this year, I spoke to someone who was blind and she had worked in, I'm blanking out what agency she worked in. It might have been NOAA. And she had told me that a lot of the times when people just saw her with her walking stick, it was, oh, no, thank you. Even though like you can't openly discriminate against disabled workers, you can also just not hire them. And so it's harder to prove discrimination. But when she was going through the process at the federal government, it wasn't an issue at any time.
Now, is there any hope for return to work? I mean, is there anything in this that you could look at the Trump administration and go, well, you know, they're transitioning. Maybe it's not going to be so bad. Because I got to tell you, from where I sit, and I look at this administration as a very fascistic administration. Mm-hmm. Some history plays into parts where they're going after the others. They're going after minorities. They're going after the disabled. They're going after, you know, people with gender differences. They're going after targeting certain groups. Are you seeing the same thing? Or is this in the most generous way? Just, hey, it's just how it is.
To make sure I understand this question correctly, I, of course, as someone living with disabilities myself, I hope we don't keep on going deeper and deeper into targeting of disabled people. I do not have a lot of hope for this administration. I have read Project 2025. There's a lot of targeting of disabled people, maybe not as much as targeting as immigrants and people who are gender diverse and targeting of abortion. However, there is a lot of adversity to straying from what one may consider normal, and disabled people often do not fit in that box. However, while I don't want to say disabled people aren't being targeted, I feel like from the right, there are some people who are more, I guess, willing to accept disabled people than they are other minority groups. Because we literally, it doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter what your gender is. You can become disabled at any time. And I think people recognize that. Not everyone does. And some people, you're going to become disabled for the first time with age. But we've all have someone in our family who either became disabled at some point, maybe from birth, or ourselves, or watched her parents slowly become disabled with age, whether or not they identify with that marker. So I think that makes it interesting. But Trump himself is very hostile towards disability.
No, and it's clear in what they're doing. And I hope people are recognizing this, because it's not just a byproduct of the bad policies. I believe it's targeted, because as you said, Project 2025 was very clear. And they are very clear that they want to roll things back to the good old days of, well, I would argue the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s, which for the disabled community is, well, institutions or mm-hmm. worse, right?
Yeah, it was in 1999. There was a Supreme Court case that said disabled people can't be institutionalized. That was against their will. That was 1999. That was not that long ago. And the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990. There was a Rehabilitation Act of 1973, Section 504, which was passed in 1977. So there was some stuff a bit earlier. But there has also been a lot of change over the year for disability acceptance and all that, to the point where some people who have invisible disabilities are more openly identifying as being disabled, where they may not have in the past. But a big fear of a lot of people is that due to this hostility towards disability, a lot of those people with invisible disabilities might be more quiet and not ask for accommodations because they don't want to be labeled as this other.
No, especially now with what's going on. So the question then becomes, what do people do? What do workers do in this? And I'm a union guy. The first thing I say is all workers should be in unions, should have a union contract to ensure that their rights are protected and there's someone who's fighting for them. Disabled, non-disabled, doesn't matter to me. That seems to be the first line of defense. I'm curious if you have any additional thoughts.
Yeah. I guess it's complicated going back to the federal government because we've seen these mass layoffs. Like I did mention with Schedule A, like there is reason to suspect disabled people were laid off at higher rates when those were happening. Yeah, I mean, it's really scary. I mean, it's less so with federal government jobs, but we do know people in union positions are disabled by some bad working conditions. We've seen this with many industries. And so, yeah, it's definitely a workers' issue.
But for me, it comes back to having someone there to fight for you because, you know, having a disability, you're kind of, I hope you can speak to this much better than I'm sure that I can, that you're separated from everyone else because you're different. You're special. You have unique challenges. So you're already segmented off. So for me to have someone to pull you back in, to fight for you, I think that's really important. And what we've allowed in this country to happen for far too long is we've preached this hyper-individualism where, you know, hooray for me and the heck with everyone else. And if you are in a special situation, well, there aren't a lot of people advocating for you. At least that's the way I see it from the outside looking in. Am I anywhere near correct?
I definitely think so. I also think it depends what type of industry you're in. I also think I think there is a dynamic with a lot of, not necessarily I'd say in white collar jobs, but like not blue collar jobs, which might just be all white collar jobs, where there is the need to over professionalize yourself, might be getting extra degrees in order to try and make yourself seem more qualified. So they can't argue you're not qualified because you have a disability. There's different dynamics, of course, for people with blue collar jobs, but definitely the case with a lot of these federal workers, they feel like they have to go up above and beyond when you have a disability to prove like, oh, yeah, you should have hired me and you should keep me.
So last line of question that I've got, because clearly, you know, the shutdown is one component of all of this, but, you know, election time's coming around. This seems to be one of those things that some enterprising, you know, political party should be going, hey, as you pointed out, a quarter of the population has a disability. If we're allowing the administration to target people and to do the kind of things that we see them doing and what we've read in Project 2025 that they want to do, this seems like something that should be a political issue. Do you see it the same way?
I definitely do. And I think one thing that's important to keep in mind is that disability has historically been a bipartisan issue. The reason why the ADA was passed is that it had bipartisan support. And so I definitely think it is something that can rile people up. I also think the reality is a lot of people aren't paying attention until some things are in their face. So,
right, which is why I think your article is so important, to highlight the fact that there are real faces behind the attacks. There are real people who have real suffering. Because as I've said from Election Day until this minute, you know, the solutions to our problems are going to come out of the suffering caused by their savagery. So all of the horrible things that they're doing and going to do, all of the overreach, all of the targeting, all of this stuff's going to cause real pain. And we kind of have to pay attention to it. We have to go through it, but we have to pay attention to it and try and help people in their moments. So folks like that, folks like your article, are people that we should be helping, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone who I talked to for this piece, they don't have a new job yet.
Yeah.
And so, and they, one of them I spoke to, it seems like she is liking the freelance life so far, and she might stick to it for a bit rather than getting into this rat race, because there are high rates of unemployment that are increasing, and the jobs are not increasing at the rate that we'd hope. Especially with all these layoffs.
And it could be any one of us at any time. Julie Metro, I appreciate you taking time. Great article. I hope folks will check it out over at motherjones.com. The Human Cost of Trump's War on Government by Julia Metro. Julia, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you know somebody with a disability? Do you know somebody who is maybe going through kind of a similar thing? Want to hear about it? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight, a low within a few degrees of 40. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, there could be a shower in the late afternoon and evening. Highs in the upper 50s to around 60. And again around 60 on Wednesday and partly sunny. Right now it's 53.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience. Where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Donald Trump was talking to some reporters and said, quote, "I don't think there's anything that's going to get me in heaven." He says, quote, "I think I'm not maybe heaven bound." And the good thing is at least he knows. Which is weird, because isn't he the guy who basically, you know, married the Bible and the Constitution together? Doesn't he have his own Bible? And if you have your own Bible, aren't you then supposed to just like, isn't that kind of like the pass to get right in? I don't know. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the weekend and just how crazy things have gotten, I turn to my favorite reporter, Sarah Burris. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, to check out her amazing work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm good, because, well, if I get to heaven, I don't think I have to worry about Trump being there.
Yeah, apparently he said he's on the bottom of the totem pole. I think the larger question that folks are asking about this, though, is that why is he thinking so much about getting into heaven right now? Because he just had his second annual physical, and so everybody's kind of like, are you ill? Are you dying? Is something wrong? So I don't know what's really going on with him. The self-awareness of, okay, I clearly don't think that I'm going to get into heaven. So why not change your behavior? Right? Like, why not do something?
Every old person I know who's getting to the end, they all start giving stuff away. They all start thinking about, hey, you know, what's my legacy going to be? How are my children going to remember me? They don't go, hey, let's figure out how to enrich myself while taking food out of the mouths of children and the disabled and homeless and all those people. How about thinking about that legacy there, Donnie?
Yeah. Maybe he thinks that his legacy is going to be that he has his name on more buildings.
And look, the thing is, you know, Jesus was pretty clear. If I remember the Bible pretty clearly, you know, what was it about the rich guy, eye of a needle, camel thing?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that part of this whole religion thing? And love thy neighbor as thyself? I don't think there was anywhere in that book that I read anyway as a kid that said go after immigrants with a military, have masked thugs snatch the loved off the streets in a way. I don't remember that in my book. Maybe it's in theirs. I don't remember.
Yeah, that is a good question. But again, I don't think that Donald Trump really knows any of this kind of stuff. I don't know that he has ever really had any sort of faith tradition that is other than himself. And I doubt very seriously that he has gone to church and paid any sort of attention. I know whenever he was at the funerals of people, we've seen him almost fall asleep. So I don't know, like maybe this will inspire him some way to do something nice for maybe, somebody. I don't know.
Maybe
don't
this know. Is the whole push. Maybe the Nobel Prize thing, because he was really, really pushing for it. Maybe this wanting to spread peace is part of that. I don't know. Or personally, I think it's just Obama got the Nobel Prize. Carter got the Nobel Prize. You know, Trump thinks he's entitled to it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what it is. I think it's an entitlement thing where he's just like, well, they gave it to him and he didn't even do anything. The major thing that I think he's forgetting, and that critics of this are forgetting, is that the Nobel Peace Prize cutoff is January 31st. So it's kind of like the Oscars, where it's really for the films that were the year before rather than the films of that year. So Donald Trump wasn't really in office for that long and he didn't really do anything in 2024 other than run for office. So I think, you know, Maybe he has a better shot if he legitimately establishes peace and he keeps establishing a whole bunch of pieces everywhere with a bunch of other people.
And he's got John Fetterman on his side. Evidently, Fetterman is going to be the Democrat who's going to be out there pushing for him to get the Nobel Peace Prize.
I mean, if he establishes peace in the Middle East, then I'm willing to say good on ya. But again, like Hamas said, yeah, we agreed to this thing. And the thing that I think we all should be realistic about is they've said it, you know, yes to a lot of things.
And it's like China.
It's never happened.
It's the same thing with China. You know, we got this great deal. China didn't change at all. And what you keep ending up with is this scenario where Trump keeps making these bizarre, you know, again, more threats. Like on Friday, for instance, made the threat on Friday through a social media post, $2 trillion in wealth. It just evaporated.
Oh my God. I can't imagine. I mean, thank goodness I don't have like a whole lot of money that I've invested in random companies, because Donald Trump can literally destroy you with one social media post. And we saw this during his first administration, but truly you just saw the market just like, wee. And I closed over 800 down on the Dow Jones. They lost 2% in the S&P. It was one post.
And it's bad for people who are in. It's great for people who are kind of in the know, who know he's going to tank. Because I got to tell you, part of me goes, I think part of this is planned. This is your classic pump and dump. You know, he knows he's going to send that out. It's going to send the markets into chaos. Things are going to drop, and then people are going to go in, and they're going to flip it around and make the float. And it's working people and pension funds and people like you and me who are going to get screwed in all this. All of the red hats who were telling me, you know, my 401k was better under Trump. Trump is, to me, this is theft right before our very eyes.
And I think, too, we should look at if any of the people connected to Trump in any way dumped a bunch of stuff before this post went out. Because I'd be curious to see if there were some folks who knew that this was going to happen and did something ahead of time before Donald Trump said it. You know, obviously, like if I was the social media person working for Trump, there's no way I'd be putting out a social media post without, you know, changing my stock portfolio.
Oh, you gotta get something, right? You gotta get something. I just found out that Amy Coney Barrett has a book. And this is one of those things that I really think is wrong with our system. I'm sorry, I don't really think that our Supreme Court justices should be out on the, hey, I'm hawking my book circuit. It seems like there's some potential opportunities. I don't think they should be out giving, you know, $50,000 speeches either. But evidently she's got a new book.
She's got a new book, and she's saying some really interesting things about the shadow docket. On Sunday, she did an interview with Fox News where she said something to the effect of the decisions from the shadow docket are not settled law. So we're not writing these big opinions because it's not, we haven't actually settled the issue. The problem is that there are rules that, like, the decisions that are made on the shadow docket, that's what all of the courts underneath them have to abide by. So if this isn't settled law, then what is the point?
Right. So before you go on, because not everybody knows what the shadow docket is. So what is the shadow docket?
Well, it's kind of exactly what it sounds like. It is this, you know, it is a slate of cases that you don't know about. Like, it's sort of like the backroom deals of the Supreme Court, where every, you know, whatever session that they come into, they have a list of cases where they decide, yeah, we're going to hear this one, we're going to hear this one, we're going to hear this one. And then all of a sudden, you see another case that comes out of nowhere where they have made a decision about it that nobody knew that this was coming. And sometimes they do it really quickly after they get it. Sometimes it's been sitting there for a while. But essentially, the shadow docket is somebody making a decision behind closed doors. They're not giving any information about it. There's been no argument in front of the Supreme Court. The public hasn't been able to hear anything about it. And there's nothing written about it other than, here's how we rule on this thing. And so it is the least transparent thing that exists in the court system. And I mean, like, my fantasy is you got to ban that thing at the same time that you put cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it is insane. And so this idea that that Amy Coney Barrett is saying this isn't settled law, then why is it that every court underneath you has to follow this?
Exactly. I mean, but again, with the Roberts Court, I don't think anything's actually settled anymore. I mean, what we've seen over the last several years is, you know, decisions that have been, you know, rule of law for 40, 50, 60 years, they're just flipping around. You know, we're talking about ruling the National Labor Relations Act, 90 years old. We're talking about ruling that on parts of that unconstitutional, something that for entire lifetimes have been the rule of law and the law of the land. Now, maybe not, because we've got people like Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and I think too, like, there's no ethical requirements for judges that are enforceable. Even if Roberts decides, okay, we're going to have this thing where you have to show us, you know, all of these documents every year so that we know what you're spending and who you're getting money from and whatever. If they don't turn it around, if they don't, like, show it to people, then what happens to them? Nothing. So what is the incentive really to follow any of the ethics rules when there is no penalty for it?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, what would be very, very nice is if when Democrats take over next time, they have a huge packet of ethics laws that are, you know, applies to everybody and that has legitimate penalties with it, where it's not just Supreme Court, but it's members of Congress, both sides of the aisle. You know, all of the requirements that mandate that there be some transparency about what people are making money off of and if they're self-dealing, because Americans deserve to have all of this information.
Absolutely. You know, for instance, you know, one of the things that I know is whenever the Chamber of Commerce puts an amicus brief into any court case, 75% of the time they're on the winning side.
Yeah,
I think it's important to know when each of these justices go and give speeches in front of the Chamber of Commerce and to these big corporations who are the big powerhouses behind the Chamber of Commerce, because it seems cozy. You know, they buy their books, they bring them to give high priced speeches, they take them on fishing trips to Alaska, and the justification is, well, the seat was going to be there anyway. I just decided to put my butt in it.
Jeez, they let them use their yachts, you know, to wander around Mozambique or whatever,
or RVs.
Or their RVs, or they pay for college for some relative. But, you know, I mean, it's the ethics of them. And then there is the actual transparency of cases. I watched a court case, the arguments of a court case at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday. That can't happen at the Supreme Court. Why? We are in the 21st century. Why is there not some live feed so that any person anywhere in the world can watch what's happening at the Supreme Court? You can finally hear it for the first time. You know, that's been around for a couple of years now, but this isn't the 1940s. Like, we're not gathering by the fire and the radio to listen to FDR.
We need SCOTUSPAN.
Yeah, there you go. There exactly.
You go. You got a cute name for it, SCOTUSPAN. Or GrifterSPAN. You know,
There you go.
I know, it's terrible. Terrible of me to say, but the reality is there are no profiles in courage there, in my view, especially now that we've got a full-fledged authoritarian wannabe dictator who is going after political enemies at every opportunity. I mean, first it was Comey, then it was Letitia James. I guess this week, who's got the betting line this week? Is it Bolton or is it Schiff? Who's this week?
So what the reporters are saying that have heard the inside scoop is that Bolton is going to be this week. You know, they did a raid on his house. They're saying that they found a whole bunch of classified documents. His lawyer, Abby Lowell, has said that these documents are things that have been declassified already. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see of all of the cases. This seems more legitimate.
But here's the thing. This is the weird part of this, Sarah. Isn't the guy who's in charge of our government, didn't he have a bathroom full of classified documents that he's like, no, they're mine. I'm not giving them back. They came with the ashtrays and the towels. Really?
Yeah, that's John Bolton's biggest problem, is that he did not, hide them in his bathroom and hire his staff to keep moving them around and maybe put them in his country club. That is, I guess, John Bolton's biggest flaw. The other piece, though, is that basically he's just been, you know, crap talking Trump for the last several years. And so he's made this huge enemy.
Everywhere. Yeah. I had him here on the show twice because that's what he was doing. Telling the truth about how crazy and how bad this administration was going to be and how bad it was when he was there. So, yeah. But here's the thing that should scare people. He ran on, I'm going to go after my political enemies, and he's following through on it. So, you know, this is one of those things where my red hat friends all believed that Obama and Biden did the same thing, but they can't actually point to someone that it happened to. Here, we're going to get three real quick, and I'm sure there's a longer laundry list of people who are still to come.
Yeah, and you mentioned Adam Schiff. I don't know what they're going to come up with. They tried to do, it was something similar to what they're doing with Letitia James. What they have done with hers is that whenever you fill out a mortgage application to buy a house, you check off whether that will be your primary residence or not. And with James, she had purchased a house in Virginia, and rather than living in it, she rented it out, but had checked off on the box that was going to be her primary residence. This is a scandal that is apparently so frequent that dozens of people in Donald Trump's own administration, including three cabinet members,
have done
the same thing.
Who's to say that when she bought it, you know, the intention was, you know, this is where I'm going to plan on living. So, yeah, I'll check this off. And then in the interim, over a bit of time, you go, well, no, maybe this opportunity came up. I'm going to stay in New York. Who knows? But here's the thing. If you're going to go after one person, if you're going to go after her, don't you have to go after everyone? And this is the argument that people are making when what happened to Trump. Well, everybody does what Trump did. Maybe rich people have been getting away with this stuff for a pretty long time. If Trump really wanted to make things right, wouldn't he say, okay, you know, we're going after everybody?
You would think. So there should be three cabinet members who are indicted, along with Letitia James.
Yeah.
But we don't see it.
We'll see. Lastly, the government shut down, still shut down, which I think a lot of people are like, except the workers who are showing up without paychecks, the people who have been furloughed, and the people who are going to probably lose their jobs permanently because Trump and them see the opportunity. And, oh, by the way, all of those construction workers whose projects, from the previous administration that were funded through Congress and signed into law, all those jobs are going to be paused, stopped, delayed, or done away with. Any new news?
I mean, I don't think there's any real end in sight. The light at the end of the tunnel seems like it looks like a train.
And when Marjorie Taylor Greene is the voice of reason.
That is the weirdest thing that happened last week. Is that Marjorie Taylor Greene has found some sense. And I don't know if she hit her head. I don't know if she, like, somebody gave her a kindness pill. I have no idea what happened, but it's really destabilizing to be like, really? Marjorie Taylor Greene is the voice of reason for the Republican Party? But this is where we are now.
No, it shows you how far the Republicans have gone completely off the deep. They're off the cliff now. They're in terminal velocity, free fall to the bottom, to the bottom of the abyss. And she's just a little bit above that.
Yeah. And the thing is like the argument over the Obamacare subsidies, which is, you know, the reason that Democrats don't want to sign off on, you know, the new budget that Republicans have. Green is smart enough to understand that the people in her district are on Obamacare. I want to say it's something like 18 of the 24 million people who are on Obamacare are in districts where Donald Trump won. They're red states, they're Republicans. There are more people that benefit from Obamacare that are Trump voters than there are Democratic voters. And so, like, the discussion on the left has just been like, you know, let them touch the hot stove. At this point, you have Democrats consistently bailing out Republicans on a lot of these issues. And so I think some people are just ready to throw up their hands and be like, you know what? Let's just let them.
Yeah. See, there's a part of me there, but then there's the other part of me that goes, you know what? I was that kid growing up in the housing project. And what I know about Republicans, they don't care. They don't care about me. They don't care about that poor kid. They don't care about poor people. They don't care. So if Democrats aren't going to be the one to stand up for them, you're hoping your savior are the Republicans who really don't care. I don't know. I struggle with that kind of, well, screw them. Struggle with that.
It's really hard because the empathetic part of you is just like, no, we need to take care of people. Regardless of whether of who it's politically expedient for. But it is the argument over what's the matter with Kansas on a national scale.
Well, we will see. It's going to be an interesting, fun week ahead. As always, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Rawstory.com, where you go to find Sarah Burris's work. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out the website, rawstory.com. I want to hear your thoughts. You in a red state that's benefiting from the dreaded Obamacare? I want to hear it. Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So that is the big question, is it? Who's next? Will it be the mustache man, John Bolton? Will it be Adam Schiff? Or will it be somebody else? Is there someone else in the running? Because there's a long list on the grievance train. Who could it be? Where's the smart money going? Because, look, if you're going to play Wheel of Dictator, what's the next move by our authoritarian king? What's the next thing our unitary executive, what's the next bee he gets in his bonnet? Because that's what this is about. This isn't about justice or truth or honesty or the rule of law. No. This is really about punishing. And it's not even about finding these people guilty. It's just about making their lives miserable of having to go through the process. It's about breaking them, about bankrupting them. Because all of this stuff is costly. None of it's free. There's nobody out there going, gee, we're gonna take James Comey's case for free. So for me, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes and how far down the list before people go, this isn't what we want. Already starting to hear people saying, what, there are way too many soldiers on the streets, not used to seeing military people with military weapons walking around in town, getting in between me and my froyo. And that's bad, evidently. But some good news, our dear leader is in exceptional health, according to the doctor that released on Friday. He had a physical, said in excellent health. And evidently, this should not make the MAGA happy. This will not make MAGA happy. Got a COVID-19 vaccine booster. He got the jab. So, you know, what's going in? You know, what does Bill Gates have on Donald Trump? Oh, geez. And the thing is that this is something that you give Donald Trump credit for. You know, he's the guy who funded the push to getting the vaccine. And yet, this is the weird world in MAGA world. They don't want to talk about that. And he wants to be the godfather or the grandfather or the father of the vaccine. He wants to be known as the guy. But it's just not that big in his circle. But I was surprised to see the report that he got the booster. You're not going to see him out there with a Band-Aid going, I got it. But secretly, you know, and he went ahead and did it. Because he's an older guy. I don't know about exceptional health, maybe exceptional for his age. But, you know, we will see. Guy runs around a lot, causes a lot of chaos. And chaos is something he is very good at. And as I said earlier, you know, we are in the midst of what is going to be an economic civil war. And this is by design. And it's been framed as red blue. It's really up down. It's really rich poor, and the working class everywhere is getting screwed in this. Understand, the working class is getting stiffed in every single scenario. And this is the part that I find rather, I'd like to say comical, but it's not. It's sad. It's downright sad, in that we're still fighting over it. You know, when the economy took a dump, when the stock market took a dump on Friday, those are working people's. Those are their stocks. That's what, you know, mutual funds and 401ks and IRAs and all the things that people are putting their nest eggs into. Now, look, if you're there long enough, it'll come back, and I'm not overly concerned about it. You have these kind of fluctuations. But when you've got it that seems like, I don't know, bit convenient, bit, you know, timed. And we know Trump is a guy who will tell you flat out he loves when the housing market crashes so he can go buy, you know, working class people's houses really cheap and then rent them back to them. Yeah, this is that. Welcome to what he's already told you. So the part that I guess I want to emphasize, I got to tell you, I think Donald Trump is one of the most honest politicians of my lifetime. He's telling us to our face he's screwing us. And we don't believe him. That's the part that gets me. And he's getting away with it, lying in the pockets. He's probably never been richer. And yet still, you got people buying the merch, repping the merch. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. We'll be right back. email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump and world leaders signed the Gaza peace plan in Egypt.
Nobody thought this could happen. With the historic agreement we've just signed, those prayers of millions have finally been answered. As you know, the hostages have been returned.
Hamas has released all 20 of its living Israeli hostages, and Israel has released nearly 2,000 imprisoned Palestinians. Roger Karstens is a former U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs.
As you celebrate the fact that the war may be over and these hostages have come home, people are also going to be thinking about what was lost. What was lost over the past 2 years?
CBS's Nancy Cordes says President Trump is now asking countries to step up with cash.
It is estimated by regional leaders that it will cost about $53 billion to rebuild Gaza. And that money is going to have to be put up by wealthy nations like